You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul Bloom.
Hello, Robert Wright. How you doing?
I just couldn't be better. Let me introduce us, Paul. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter. Also I host the Non-Zero Podcast, which this is. And I'm author, as of last week, of a book called The God Test, Artificial Intelligence and Our Coming Cosmic Reckoning, which you could order on Amazon, rate and review, unless you don't like it, in which case, just order it, don't rate and review. You're Paul Bloom, worthwhile Canadian psychologist, prolific author. There's one of your books I hope to talk about eventually. I'll surprise you with which one it is. Also, proprietor of the newsletter Small Potatoes, which everyone should check out. And, you know, Paul, you and I were hashing over subjects we might talk about. You brought up the possibility that books are dead. Now, my position is books are not dead. They're on life support, and AI is pulling the plug even as we speak. And by the way, and I'll get to this, you doubt me, you're laughing, right? Oh, no, you haven't heard this. You'll be laughing when I say this, but then you won't doubt me when I get on to elaborating. Skynet, you're familiar with Skynet?
Yeah, Terminator.
The AI in the movie Terminator that comes back to kill people that would impede its eventual development, a time travel thing with AI. Skynet has launched an attack on my book, and I would too if I were Skynet. Let me just say that. You're laughing, Paul. Are you laughing?
No,
I can't see. Are you laughing?
No, I can see.
Okay,
your book, which you know we talked about last time, and I have nothing but praise for. I'll tell you a few things. One thing is you have been ubiquitous recently. I cannot open up my podcast feed without hearing you talk with some person or another about your book.
That's an exaggeration probably, but yeah, I'm working it. I'm doing what I can. Yeah. I'm working it.
It is a bit of exaggeration, but still, you are all over the place. I was just listening to you.
Fair to say. I'm literally omnipresent.
I was listening to you talk with Tamara Summers and David Pizarro on Very Bad Wizards.
On the Very Bad Wizards podcast. You know what they said? That you and I are the only people to ever, I think, be honored with like book plug status. Like they don't let people come on and talk about their books.
They do not.
Because their podcast has so much clout. They don't have to play that game. They're like, you will come on our podcast on our terms.
Yeah.
And people go, whatever you say, but Paul, you and I, special. We're special.
We're the exceptions. And I was going to say something else, which I forget. But
insert a quick reference before we get back to books being dead and whatever else you want to say? A super important development this week and over the last week that whose importance is not widely appreciated. I think Trump having basically taken the latest model that Anthropic wanted to put on the market, Mythos, and take it off the market, finally green-lighted it. And in effect, established an ongoing licensing policy. This is just a very important issue, as I will eventually get around to explaining. I actually wrote a piece about it in the Washington Post before he greenlighted it, but it lays out all the important issues. Like this, historians will come back and go, oh, this is where, this was a key moment in the decision about where power over AI resides, which became increasingly important as AI became increasingly powerful. Now back to Skynet, but first to you, yeah?
So the Skynet reference, by the way, could be that some of your book could be taken, you know, in the future as an attack on the plans of malevolent AI. If so, they may want to go back into the past and destroy you. Or at least destroy
Thank
the
you.
Possibility of your
Thank
book.
Thank you for clarifying that. That is this what's going on. My book is designed to terminate the Terminator. So naturally, if you're the Terminator, what do? You attack Bob's book.
I'll also say that I just heard that Florence Pugh is starring in a remake of the Terminator.
Really? Is that true?
And
who is this person you speak of? What was that name?
Florence Pugh.
That name, right?
Yeah, she's like a well-known actress, just does good stuff. She was in this Olivia Wilde thing with the guy who played Captain Kirk. Anyway.
She used to be married to Ted Lasso, right? In real life.
Olivia Wilde used to be.
in real yes. life.
Jason somebody.
Jason somebody. You know, yeah. it's up to him. I don't think I would have left her, but it's up to him.
This is, you know, this is what we do when we have no prep. This is so.
Okay. Okay. Let's get to know you.
Here's the point I was getting to. I'm reading yeah. Regime Change, this tell-all book about Donald Trump's first year into the second term, which is full of incredible gossip.
Which is from my publisher, Simon & Schuster, by the way.
I could understand that. And I think these two, the God Test and Regime Change are being promoted.
I would say Simon & Schuster's promotional efforts are about evenly divided between the two, yeah.
That's right. Anyway, there's a story. So Trump didn't care one way or another about AI. He didn't really understand it. And there's a story, I didn't go back and look at it, but he then had a meeting, like a 20-minute meeting with, I think, the heads, either the head of Anthropic or OpenAI, I think maybe Sam, I forget who it was, but some AI guy, and Trump's there in the Oval Office, whatever. And then they say, you know, this could do all sorts of incredible things. Like, do you want to see, like, you know, a cat flying a fighter plane? And you're like, really?
Do I?
And then, so this meeting, which is like for 20 minutes, goes on for an hour and a half as they show.
Can we put a gold collar on the cat?
That's right. That's right. And so he really got into it.
I don't doubt it.
Trump is a man of many facets, but there is also the sort
including,
of adorable,
including sheer fucking stupidity. I mean, yes, this yes, guy, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
You cannot miss an opportunity to say shit about Trump. But I was going to say some of his more positive features, which is often a childlike amusement at things and delight in things.
He's intermittently endearing. Those moments last about a moment, I would say. But yes, I know what you mean.
Yes. Anyway, books are dead.
Yeah. Now, first, before I get into the attack that's been launched on my book by the AI from the future, you're laughing now. No, you're not. You will not be laughing.
As you elaborate.
After I lay out the evidence. This is mind-blowing. Things like this don't happen to a book by accident, Paul. But first, the generic thesis is kind of obvious, right? Like, so books are famously in trouble. I mean, I'm not saying my book is doing any worse than the average book, but books generically are known to be in trouble. And, you know, like just the number it takes to get on the bestseller list drops. It's like publishers say, we don't know it works. Nothing works. It's like last time, my last book, Terry Gross, was like major. They're like, well, that doesn't consistently work. Joe Rogan doesn't work. Blah, blah, blah. We don't know. There's like two things they would like you to do. And they are both beyond my power. So
Joe Rogan.
Anyway, what?
Two things. Joe Rogan is one.
No, not even. I mean, he doesn't talk about books. Like, you can go on there with a book and he may not mention it for an hour.
What are the two things?
Like, he doesn't do book conversations per se. Yeah. What?
What are the two things?
Oh, I'm not going to reveal secret information. Okay. Maybe in overtime. In overtime, okay. For our Patreon subscribers.
Paying customers.
Paid subscribers.
So I don't have the stats at my fingertips, but just one thing, which is, and everybody's always saying books are dead. Everybody always, you know, always catastrophizing everything. But the number of people who read a book in a given year is just dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping.
Correct.
People just are reading books less. I'm not sure they're reading less. I think I read a lot online. I think people read an enormous amount online. Maybe, we're writing more than prior to.
Well, they also listen a lot. They listen to podcasts, yeah. So they won't have to buy the author's book. That's why it's so like brilliant of me to spend all this time on all these podcasts promoting the book.
You're saving people money.
Exactly. And that's the kind of person I am.
There's an argument to be made. So I wrote this Substack on exactly this issue, which is, you know, about how little we know about how to sell a book. And you know, it's just largely, it either has to catch fire in people's minds, or you have to be, you know, you have to come into it being Lena Dunham or Donald Trump or mm-hmm. Stephen King or whatever like that. But what I didn't say is, in some way, suppose podcasts don't sell books, but podcasts still get the word out.
They do.
And then they're fun, and you get people listen to you, and you know.
I mean, half the point of the book is to become part of that conversation, right? I mean, that's actually, you know, I'm not starving to death. I'm actually not in it for the money. I mean, if people want to send me money, I'm available. But
you're in it for the status.
But What's that?
Status.
It's the status. No, it's, no, it's the not, it's the really. The I'm legions of you. Yeah. It's what it does for your raw magnetism. You know, you're familiar with this. You walk around.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, it's about becoming part of the conversation. It's about having influence over the discourse. And I feel that, like, right now, the world would really benefit from my inclusion in the conversation, man. This shit is going to get wild. That's the premise of the book. It's going to get fucking wild, people. Don't come back 2 years ago and say I didn't warn you. What?
You take these issues extremely seriously, and separate for what it does for you, money, you know, groupies.
Which I'm not interested in.
Separate from
people
that.
People give it to me. Yeah.
You want to persuade people to take the looming AI, to feel awe at AI properly defined.
Well, yeah, but as a prelude to getting the shit scared out of them.
Yeah.
I mean.
And then form a world government.
Well, I wouldn't. World government is a misleading term for what's in order. Let's call it international coordination. One thing about AI is any centralization of power should scare you more than it used to. That includes at the global level. You want to minimize the extent to which the governance is centralized. You want to keep everything as decentralized as possible. But there's no escaping the fact that if we want to not be living in an apocalyptic hellscape, in, like, I think even 5 years, we're going to have to do a lot of international coordination governance of a kind we're not accustomed to, and we're not ready. We're not ready.
Yeah, you see, so
I mean,
if you get people to appreciate that point, then if they don't buy the book, they don't even remember your name, you're golden.
Honestly, well, no, actually, it would be nice if they remember
your name. Yes, that's probably true.
But no, the message is the main thing, and if they get me mixed up, you know, with one of the biblical prophets, that's fine. If people are going, oh, Hosea, right? No, it's Robert Wright or something like that. That would be okay.
Yeah.
So look, can I before we look? The thesis is pretty self-evident, right? It's like, remember when sometimes you'd really need to learn something, and you'd get like a nonfiction book, maybe even if you didn't plan to read it cover to cover.
Yeah.
You knew you were gonna need to read large parts of two chapters or something. You were gonna peruse it and zone in on. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say this, but that's not as efficient as asking an AI with most subjects. Now, my thesis, it's an interesting question. I doubt you can yet get my thesis along with the evidence via AI. And in any event, I do think it's funny. I guess I hadn't thought of this. I guess I would say that the kind of argument I'm making in the book and the kind of exposition I spend a lot of time on trying to explain to non-technical people why this stuff is going to be so powerful. I do think it's a case where ordering like really matters. I mean, you can't, but that aside, as a rule, interactivity of AI is mind blowing. Go ahead.
I agree, but I'll make your point more generally, which is, suppose your book is 300 pages. Like, I got a PDF, it was 300 pages. Your claim would be, I think, that it is a set of ideas and examples and warnings that cannot be summarized in anything less than 300 pages. If you could, you would. If somebody says, here's a 299-page summary of Bob's book, you say, yeah, something's lost. So, presumably, for a book to earn its, now, one reason I think why podcasts are becoming popular, magazine article more popular, Substack and so on, is because most books are just bloated versions of an article or a discussion.
Right. Whereas my books are. No, Paul, yours are not bloated. They're a slender and sinewy.
Tip of my books are like the tip of the iceberg, where underneath the water is my vast body of knowledge and expertise. And just kind of show you a little bit. And you
get, muscular body, your muscular body.
But so the defense of books is that if the book is done well, every fucking word is worth reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it cannot be summarized, because if it could be summarized without loss of value, you would have done it. You wouldn't have written 300 pages.
And did you fail to find a word, a single superfluous word in my whole book, Paul? I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, so to speak, but
I think there could have been more. I, for instance, the acknowledgement section I found was sort of weak in some ways.
Only had two words about Paul Bloom, and they were Paul Bloom.
My name.
So, look, enough about you, Paul.
Yeah.
Enough about you.
You're able to amend things for the paperback, so don't even worry about this.
I've already written the new paragraph about you and sent it to them and said, be sure and don't leave this out of the paperback.
So on a practical level, there are some people I know who make a living writing books or try to make a living writing books.
And or did.
Maybe this is out of date, but somebody...
Hey, how prescient am I, Paul? I've got a 2-book contract.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm I've gotten the advance on a book that will be published on a date when no one is buying books. How prescient is that? So how could people doubt my view of what will happen with AI if I am that cannily prescient, Paul?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I interrupted you.
No, I see the problem.
I uncharacteristically talked about myself. Go ahead.
A friend of mine told me that for advances, 100,000 is a new 300,000, that book advances are going down.
That it was exactly my thinking.
So get your money up front.
There
are things that are we could list a bunch of things that are going away. I think that one thing's going away is I'm not the first to say this, late night talk shows, which used to be such a part of our culture. Conan O'Brien, Dave Letterman, and Johnny Carson used to be such a thing, and which
is a shame because Stephen Colbert held up. Back when he had a show on Comedy Central, my book, The Evolution of God, after I was on the show, and said, great book, folks.
Really? The Colbert.
Is that O'Reilly calling you?
Is that the Colbert Report?
Yeah.
Yeah, satire on Bill O'Reilly, which was very enjoyable.
No, it's true. And he recently departed the late night sphere. Let me make sure people understand what I'm saying about AI in books is like AI is interactive. It's so efficient. So, it's like you can either order a book or you can just summon the world's greatest expert on any subject and ask them questions. Now, you got to be careful about the hallucination,
let me push back and say that I read a fair amount of books and. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily read the book because it's what I view as the most efficient information transfer. I read the book to find myself, hear stories, even for nonfiction, find myself in another world, be immersed in someone else's consciousness. So, Regime Change is a big book, but it's kind of fun to read because it's full of examples and stories. And I skim some parts and I focus on other parts. Your book is very rich, all sorts of stuff. It's not the optimally efficient way of getting ideas across, but that's not really the point.
Yeah, but that's truer of some genres than others.
Yes.
It's very true of, like, biographies. I'll listen to those and take a walk. My book is kind of in the middle of the spectrum, I would say. I'm not going to claim that it is as narratively compelling as some. I mean, I work hard on that, but...
It's pretty narratively compelling.
No, there's a setup and a delivery and so on. But so you think I'm kidding about the Skynet thing? You don't want to hear the evidence?
Go ahead. I think you're saving this for the paid customers.
No. I think I deserve much wider pity than that.
Go ahead. So what is your argument that AIs from the future are coming into our timeline to stop you from destroying them?
There are two separate interventions in the Amazon whatever. Right? Like Amazon is this vast, like, supercomputer, basically, that sells a lot of shit. Okay? So first of all, and I'm not the type to complain, as you know, but first of all, the week before Pub, and as you know, the reason, one reason pre-orders matter is because they all count in the first week of Amazon's book count, and that in turn has various implications, certainly including whether you get on bestsellers lists, right?
Yes.
And so on. So, you know, authors work to get pre-orders. Now, so a week before, I look at the book and it's like, okay, you can get, there's the hardcover, there's the Audible, there's the Kindle, and there's the paperback. wait, there's a paperback of my book that's $10 cheaper than the hardcover? Like, won't people, what? That's not supposed to be the case.
Yeah.
Right? For another year. And so I started charting its sales rank. And the hardcover wasn't moving, but the paperback was getting better and better. I mean, naturally, people see two options. That's what they order.
Yep.
Have you ever heard of this happening?
No.
Of course not, because Skynet's not targeting any other authors.
So what?
Why do they even ask questions like that, Paul? The answer is so obvious.
So if I went online and ordered a paperback copy of your book, what would I get?
Well, we finally got it removed after a few days and me finally sending an email in all caps to my publisher. You know, because when you're dealing with Amazon, wait till you hear my other tale of woe, which is not resolved with Amazon. But when you're dealing with, like, I don't know, you're sending emails to your publisher, they're communicating with Amazon. It's like any third party thing. Yeah. I mean, first of all, obviously, I feel the urgency like no one does. It's my book.
Yeah.
You would hope that, you know, there's somebody at the publishing house who also
cares.
But I need clarification
of the story. If the paperback hasn't come out yet and won't come out for a year, when people ordered a paperback online, what are they getting?
Oh, I ordered and I got it. It's downstairs. Here's what happened. There is something called an international edition, which basically is a paperback that, as I understand it, goes to kind of lower income countries with a large English speaking population.
That's
I think
nice.
It's sold in India, for example. I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
But I remember them clearing the copy with me and me not being that finicky because I'm like, you know, I don't know what it's like in this country. Maybe this, you know, the jacket copy, I mean. So I've got the paperback in my book downstairs. But my main point was this was just Terminator shot across the bow, Paul.
Yeah.
We got this resolved. Here is the killer, which persists to this day. And again, you know, I'm not the type to complain, but.
You are right. I could buy the Kindle, the audiobook, the hardcover, the audio CD, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. But I cannot buy a paperback of your book.
Not now. We got it removed. But the people who ordered it got it. And their numbers don't help because they are international. They didn't help. So I was, I think, right to be freaked out.
Yep.
And with enough all caps, you can get people to read your emails, I found. Then the funny thing, I thought this was funny when I discovered it 2 months ago. Maybe you remember this. Maybe I told you about it, but like, you would click, you'd go to one of my books and click like on the author. And it would like, you would see a picture of some guy who's not me, who if it was my Buddhism book, he does look more like the author of a Buddhism book than me, which is good. And that's what I said at first, like, well, this will probably sell more books than my picture would. But then I realized that what this means, oh God, we've spent 2 months literally trying to resolve this. Because again, it's like three parties. You're trying to get your publisher's attention. They're trying to get Amazon's attention. Nobody cares about it as much as you do. And 2 months later, it is still the case that, I'll just cut to the chase. The Amazon recommendation algorithm does not know that the author of my new book wrote my other books. Now think about that. It is a safe bet that if the algorithm were functioning right, someone who has bought, you know, Audible, Kindle, hardcover, paperback of Non-Zero, The Moral Animal, The Evolution of God, Why Buddhism is True, whatever, if they clicked on an artificial intelligence book, or they search for artificial intelligence, or did God knows what. I don't know how the algorithm works, but they would then be more likely to see my book, right? I mean, unless the algorithm, I mean, look, maybe Jeff Bezos isn't Elon Musk, but he's not dumb. I mean, this is like the table stakes for recommendation algorithm. None of that is happening with me on Amazon a week after pub date.
That's very
now,
frustrating.
As you know, Paul, having attained enlightenment, I am not the kind of...
having had ego death.
Oh, spe- Speaking of which, like on my keyboard, I spilled water on my keyboard. This is not Skynet. There's a counter Skynet at work. Thank God. No, maybe this was Skynet. Oh, anyway, I'll tell you what happened. You tell me. About a week ago, I was getting super wrapped up in this shit. As you can tell, I'm now. It's an attitude of detached amusement.
It's the point of the view of the universe, really, now.
Yeah. As what was the name of that philosopher? Peter Singer quotes him all the time. Yes, I have the point of view of the universe.
It's not Bentham.
Well, look, I do. The universe is not happy about this, Paul. Anyway, I spilled water on it. Now, okay, you know, and I turn it upside down.
Sedgwick,
yeah. And I turn it upside down, Henry, right? Henry Sedgwick? Yeah. I turn it upside down, you know, you let the water out, yeah. And there's going to be some residual effect, but you'll come back in an hour, it'll work, a day it'll work, a week it'll work, not fully. And you know what key doesn't work, Paul?
Which one? What key?
We're talking about the death of the self. You just referred to ego death.
Is it I? You have no eye.
I, Paul. So you know what? I just figured out while talking to you. Skynet wants me to rise above. Don't care about this. Just let Skynet take over the fucking planet. Nice try, Arnold. Not happening. I am a bodhisattva. I have come back from the edge of enlightenment to care deeply about the fate of my book, Paul.
I often wonder what you'd be like if you never meditated.
Hey, Paul, you've been an author.
I have been in a situation with
not this one.
There are other ways to track the success of your book, but I would always just go to Amazon and look at the numbers. And you know, the book's been out for a little while, and I see I'm to 10,400. You know, and it's just dropping, and you feel queasy. I was once in a bookstore with my older son, and I immediately go to the bookstore. It was right after my book was published, and I walk around looking around, and I look at him, and they say, "They don't have my book," and I'm really pissed. And he says, "Get over yourself. Oh my God, you're so obsessed with your book. You always all you care about." He got really mad at me, and then now I'm a better person.
You should just spill water on your keyboard. That works too. But I just want to say before we talk about, I have a thing about your book. In fact, I'm going to try to.
Go ahead.
But don't you think partly out of sympathy for me and partly as part of the planet's fight against Skynet, people should just go to Amazon, order my book out of just, you know, like the goodness of their heart, even if they don't plan to read it, give it to somebody.
It's humanity's last stand, really.
Last exam, as the Dan Hendrix metric has it. What?
Yeah. Are you the side of the humans or of the machines? And if you care about humans, you should buy the God test. Remember,
you said
there's no
better than
I
possibly
there's no I in the God test. I can't remember the subtitle.
Shit, that is such a great advertising blurb. You wish that a publisher was spending marketing money on a book.
Wow.
So, Paul,
I would have provided a blurb, but nobody asked me.
Well, you know, it's funny. SNS, under previous, I don't know what the policy now is, they adopted a no blurb policy some time ago.
Really?
Yeah. It was after, I mean, they were bought by this private equity firm, KKR. The editor-in-chief remained John Karp during this period, but, I mean, he's now got his own imprint, but it became an official policy. They said, don't bother. And it's a relief, you know, but I'm not sure it's a good idea, but it's a relief.
I don't know. I've heard different things. New York Times had something about blurbs on how fundamentally corrupt they are. Where, you know, you
blurb
my book.
Well, that's not the question. The whole world is corrupt. All the question is, are they effective?
Yeah. I don't know. There's obviously there's no science behind this. I hate asking for blurbs. I just hate it. It's to me the worst part. You know, because you ask people, you ask people you don't know, like, dare, you know, dear Mr. Ezra Klein, you know, I have long admired you. I wonder if you'd be interested in reading, you know, and, or you ask your friends, hey, Bob, you know, hate to bother you with this, but, you know, I wonder if you, no hard feelings if you, in either way, it feels awful.
I hate it.
I asked a sort of quasi friend for a blurb once, and she responded with a very, very long email explaining why she couldn't provide a blurb. And I was thinking, if you kind of put the fucking energy into writing a blurb that you put into this email, we'd be done already.
Well, I'm the same way, though. I blurbs are very hard for me. I mean, first of all, I like to read the actual book, a pretty rare policy in the blurb world. And I'm a slow reader. And then, formulating any English sentence takes me about a day and a half.
So maybe we should say this for overtime. Maybe this is a terrible confession, and maybe this is going to screw a lot of people I've written blurbs for, but there is a shortcut for writing blurbs these days.
I think you said this before. You're using large language models to write blurbs?
I'm using large...
This is like when Ross Douthat asked Peter Thiel if he cared whether humanity survived or whatever. Peter Thiel's like...
It's not a yes no question.
Yes, it is.
I fed into LLMs 20 of my blurbs, so it knows what my blurbs look like. And then I read a book, and I always read the book, but you know the adjectives, the this, the that. So then I say, you know, I put the PDF of the book into chat, and I say, you know, write a blurb as I would write it, and focus on this, that, and other. Focus on the humor of the book, or focus on the originality, and then it comes out. Then I edit it, and it just is so much quicker. But as with everything, the ability of AI to create this simulations of human product will degrade the human product. Blurbs will matter less than they do.
Line. The surrender of agency happens very gradually, Paul. Pretty soon, you look around, a matrix pod, and I'm in it.
Yeah. I edited a journal, and there has been a substantial uptick in submissions. And they're all like, it's not glial cells, it's dopamine. And, you know, it's so much stuff is AI written now.
Well, you know, that's what I wonder about the sales rank numbers on Amazon. Like, when I look at them and wish I... ranked higher on them, and I want to blame something other than my book, I think, well, there's the fact that the recommendation algorithm isn't working on my hat. Yeah, but I've got to think there's also, because self-published books, I mean, everything counts in that, now people more and more do de facto self-published books that have a hardcover version available, I guess. So,
well, I don't know. There's also AI-written books. Increasingly.
Well, that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, I'm typing in the God test for a search. I'm just wondering, you should keep an eye out that there's not another book created, you know, the God test, a user's guide or whatever.
Well, that happens eventually. That happened with the Buddhism book. But so Paul, enough about me. I alluded to this, I think, last time we talked, but I just got to ask you. So you wrote an excellent, well-considered critique of the concept of empathy. It was called Against Empathy. It didn't mean you're against empathy per se, but you think we deploy it injudiciously. And I thought it was, you know, spot on. I said very good things about it.
This is a very
and
generous.
And it did fine. Discerning readers loved it. And yet now you look on the bestsellers list, and there's a book with empathy in the title by this guy named Gad Saad. And first of all, Paul, let's be candid. What the fuck kind of name is that? Gad Saad? Occurred to you, by the way, to just ridicule his name? I mean, do you have any antagonism toward the author? What's the name of the book? Suicide by Empathy or something? What is it?
Suicidal Empathy.
Oh, so you are familiar with the book. Huh? I wasn't sure whether you would be.
Familiar with the book. Uh-huh. Like you, Saad leans into his name. So you know, if you don't, this is, I'm the podcast you were at, Very Bad Wizards, they called their episode with you The Right Stuff.
You know, that particular pun had not occurred to me.
It's not bad. Gad Saad wrote a book called The Sad Truth About Something. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I had him on my podcast, I think I told you, back before he was as...
Really?
I don't use words like crazy about people. So back before he was as, how should I say, distinctive in his worldview as he is now.
I have not read Suicidal Empathy yet. So I have read excerpts.
No, I haven't either. I'm just judging by his output, yeah. Social media output and stuff. Go ahead. Sorry.
It's success. It's no longer on number one in a bestseller. It was very strongly promoted by Elon Musk.
Oh, God.
Very, very strongly promoted by him. Because Elon and Gad share similar view about, say, immigrants, about immigration, about Islam, about the purported threat to Western countries of dark-skinned immigrants.
This Elon thing is scary, the amount of power he has, especially if his AI bet is looking closer to paying off since they acquired this company called Cursor. And
what's his AI bet?
Well, XAI is this, you know, they made Grok, but
Grok, it was a Grok famous always flop. Seemed like something people don't take seriously outside of, you know.
Well, all the founders left. Pictures. All the founders left. It kind of imploded. I think perhaps working with Elon turned out not to be their favorite thing. But so, yeah, it was kind of a famous disaster as of a few months ago. But then in prep for the IPO, he quasi-acquired Cursor, which is one of the first coding agents. And now I think post IPO, he's made it official that it's now he's acquired it. And people are saying, so now he's back in the game.
Oh, okay. So I haven't read Saad's book. My impression from summaries of it is that it makes a point which I would agree with. That mm-hmm. sometimes our feelings of empathy could lead us awry. And we're better off with sort of, sometimes with sort of what I would call rational compassion. But his book is basically takes that insight, which I think is not unique to me, but general insight, and then extends it only in one direction in the culture wars, to argue that liberals are, you know, deranged by empathy. And every, you know, and have lost all contact with morality and rationality and so on. It's suicidal because liberals caught up with empathy for minorities and immigrants and everything invite these people into our house who then go to rape and kill us and kill our children and enslave us and give us drugs and everything like that. And if only we were more reasonable, we would expel these dark-skinned invaders from our land. And that's not quite the direction of my book. I mean, it captures the first half.
Just said that a 5-year-old named Jessica should be left to die a horrible death.
That's right. That's right. I said we shouldn't care about white people. So it is a bit true.
That is better. I applaud that message. Jessica was white. No, the point. It was a good point.
It does lead us awry, but it is in fact suicide. Empathy is misdeployed on the right just as much as on the left. And it leads, it is not a sin that one political affiliation has. But anyway, I think what happened, getting back to the book selling business, my understanding is that if you have enough money, you can get on the bestseller list by doing a lot of pre-orders,
it is more corrupt than it used to be because you see this with, you know, businessy books where, or one thing they'll do. I will say to their credit, I'm sure the New York Times list tries to filter some of this out. But, you know, if you're a big name in the business consulting world or something, you say, I'll give a talk. How much you want to pay me? How much should we pay you? Not much, but if you could buy everyone who attends a talk a copy of my book, that would be great.
And to be fair, I have a friend of mine, I won't say who he is because he didn't give me permission to tell the story, who did exactly that. He does a lot of talks. He has a book coming out, a lot of talks. He says, buy a book for everybody. That's how you can pay me, and so on. Mm-hmm. And they expected to end up on a bestseller list somewhere, and he just didn't. And he thinks that they were that the algorithms or people looking were smart enough to twig that these were not sort of genuine sales.
Yeah, no, I think they've gotten better, but it's a cat and mouse game. And, you know, now think about it. You can deploy AI agents to independently buy anything, right? Think about it. Think about it, Paul.
Huh.
So it's an arms race. And, but it's the other thing is, you know, when publishers say, we don't know what works anymore. New York Times book review. I mean, honestly, my feeling now is I hope they don't review the book. I just feel so cursed. But you know, this is not a good run of luck. I'm sure it would be a bad review. What?
They would review the book negatively.
What?
They review the book negatively. That can't hurt you.
I think it can.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it could.
Because the thing is, the New York Times, a New York Times review is just not worth as much as it used to be to begin with. No one thing is almost. Yeah,
there's nothing that matters anymore, really.
Yeah.
Like, I used to think, I for one of my books, I got a New York Times op-ed piece printed in timed with the book's release.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing matters anymore.
Well, they say that about that. They do say that's one of the few things that can work. I didn't get that mission accomplished myself. The Times has a funny policy, which we can get to in overtime. But
really, do they discourage you promoting your books through op-eds? It doesn't seem that way. I've seen this happen with other people.
Well, you know, we should just go into overtime so we can just let the her hair books down and let her rip, man. Let's name names. Let's talk about Gadsad. If that is in fact a real name, let's talk about that.
Gadsad was on Twitter, furious and venting his soul because he's leaving.
Oh,
Canada.
I didn't know that he ever raised his voice.
He's leaving Canada, and apparently Canada, like a lot of other countries, has a sort of exit tax. So, if you make a lot of money in Canada, Gadsad did with his prestigious output of books and so on, you have to pay taxes on it, capital gains or something when you leave.
That's sad.
Because otherwise, you know, Canada doesn't get any taxes for money you earn there. But this was a surprise to Gad.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very upset. And he talked about
it. So he's Canadian?
He is originally, I think, from Egypt and immigrated to Canada at a young age. And lives in
Montreal. I don't need to spell out the irony here, I guess.
As him being an immigrant?
Yeah.
Well.
I mean, he's on an anti-immigrant crusade, as I understand it.
He certainly is. He surely is. Maybe he knows firsthand.
He's Egyptian, but is he Egyptian Muslim or Egyptian Jewish?
He is definitely Jewish. He is, I apologize, I got it wrong. He was born in Beirut, Lebanon, and then left Montreal to escape the Lebanese civil war. Lebanese, not Egyptian, my mistake.
Okay. Well, I didn't know any of that about him, but we digress. So should we go into overtime?
Yeah, I
want to talk a little about, the World Cup, by the way. In overtime, in addition to continuing this,
but I want to hear more
fascinating.
I want to hear you name names.
It's not like me, but I may. So we should say, people, that all, you know, people hear the word overtime and they're like, whoa, sounds prohibitive. What the heck is it? Paul, let's tell them.
Oh my gosh. Do you know anybody who is a subscriber either to Non-Zero
is the name of my newsletter. Yes, thank you for remembering that.
Or to Small Potatoes gets access to all of our overtime episodes. And you're going to, even once you get it, you go back and listen to other overtime episodes.
Oh, yeah. We have a rich archive.
And if you are a subscriber to both, you could listen to it twice.
I didn't know that.
That's to get the less intelligent of our
and listeners. Is it like if you if you subscribe twice to each, can you listen four times?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, my God.
And on and on and on.
Your ship has come in, folks.
Also, once you are a paid subscriber to one of us, you get an astonishing discount to subscribe to the other one of us.
You know, that's a good point. And you know what it is? It's shocking. It is 50% off of a one-year subscription.
Wait, 50%. 15% or 50?
50.
Good Lord.
Via the Non-Zero Network. If you go to, if you go to our thing and look for Non-Zero Network. Oh, there's actually a vertical on ours that says Non-Zero Network, and that'll give you the link you need to go and get a paid subscription to Paul Bloom's newsletter for almost nothing.
Almost nothing.
And half price. If you're a paid subscriber to our newsletter.
Yeah. Click on to be a paid subscriber. You immediately get access to this, what we're going to say next, where Bob will name names. And then you will also get the opportunity to sign on to Non-Zero for the substantial 50% discount.
It's just mind-blowing. I don't know how we do it. I don't know how we keep recording such mind-blowing profits each year, Paul.
We're losing money, but we make up in volume.
Making it up in volume. Well, that's the key. People think that's a joke. No, it actually works.
Sure.
Okay. So thanks, folks. Hope you follow us into overtime. But even if you don't, we love you, don't we, Paul?
Full our hearts. I mean, imagine we get to talk and then people listen to us. You know something I realized? As we were talking at the beginning, I was thinking, this is preamble to us getting into the real. And I realized, it's
wrong.
It just is.
It preamble is our brand.
Yeah.
It's the whole brand. Paul, I said, I didn't finish the sentence. I said, we love you. I meant to add, we're not talking about unconditional love. That is reserved for our offspring and their offspring.
And paid
subscribers. We love you if you rate and review and smash the like button, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, here we go into overtime.